Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with us again on another Sunday. Today, we're going to be talking about grief, how to deal with grief, the definitions of grief, and all the emotional and physical issues that go with it. Our guest today, Teresa Haas, she's the director of the Center for Grief and Healing with the Hospice of the Piedmont. We also have Rachel Palm. She's the marketing specialist with Hospice of the Piedmont. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're always welcome to be here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. So grief comes to mind, I think, for so many people in the last year or so because of the pandemic. And then I would expect that almost everyone has grief at some time in some aspect of their life. So I just want to get started with, is there an official medical or emotional definition of grief with which you work from?
Yes. So I am working from some particular grief education pioneers, and one is Alan Wolfelt, and he describes grief as whatever you think and feel inside about the death or a loss, and that can include thoughts, emotions, physical symptoms, and even unexpected behaviors you might experience because of the death or loss. All of those are part of grief. It's a combination of feelings such as shock, confusion, can be anxiety or anger, regret, and sadness, of course. And these feelings can change from minute to minute or from day to day, which can sometimes make a person feel very unsteady in their lives.
As that just seems to be rather all-encompassing. And I'm not knocking that. I'm not making fun of it. I'm not mocking it in any way. Am I right in saying that it's something that's difficult to put your thumb on, and so you need to incorporate so many things?
Well, it is all encompassing. It's a mind, body, spirit. Grief is a mind, body, spirit response. So what happens when we encounter death or when we experience loss, then, you know, our mind tries to understand death, and, you know, memories start flooding, or we start thinking about the events leading up to the death. There are practical worries, and it's hard to concentrate. And then, of course, our body experiences grief as well. We have trouble sleeping. Maybe we lose our appetite. We have lots of physical symptoms. Like we could have tightness in our throat or chest or heart palpitations. And then if that language resonates, then, we can feel stunned or shocked and question. And we can sometimes even feel abandoned. So it is all encompassing. It's so true.
So let's break this down a little bit then. When you talk about Hospice of the Piedmont and the grief, the Center for Grief and Healing, where do you start? Because I would think, is it something that it doesn't seem like there's a Vaseline to put on this to make it all begin healing. So what is stage one for beginning to make someone feel, I don't know if you can even make them feel better or just make them feel supported so that you can then proceed deeper and deeper and wider and wider?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first step towards healing is, you know, is talking about it and reaching out for support, being able to tell the story. And so, you know, there's not really a right place to begin. And that's, you know, what we'll say is just begin where can you can begin in the middle or the end or the beginning of the story. And so that process of telling the story of identifying and naming the feelings, of sharing the memories of, you know, just again, identifying, what maybe the struggle is. Sometimes it's, I can't sleep at night. Sometimes it's, you know, I feel regret. And so usually it seems like a person has identified something that's troubling. And so maybe that's a place where we begin. Or again, as I said, we can just start with the story, maybe with the death itself.
Yeah, we are talking about dealing with grief with folks from Hospice of the Piedmont, Teresa Ha. She's the director of the Center for Grief and Healing. We also have Rachel Palm, who's the marketing specialist. Teresa has been talking with us. But Rachel, if one of the first things that you need to do is to get someone to talk, how do you reach out and tell people, we're here for you, come here to do this, our doors are open, our arms are wide? Other than, I mean, in today's world, it's send a text, put something on Facebook. What is out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of the things that we are always trying to do is promote and share all of the services that we provide, which are available to anyone in our community, in our service region, which spans 12 counties, including Central Virginia, where we are here, Albemarle, all the surrounding counties, and all the way up north to Rappahannock County, west to Augusta, east to Louisa, and south to Buckingham. So we have a huge footprint. And we're always trying to get the word out through community connections, through, as you mentioned, social media. That's a really popular way to promote the services that we provide. You know, social media has some magic tricks that can be worked at this point to target certain people who have certain behaviors and have certain interests. So that's one way to do it. Without getting too specific, our digital marketing is something that we work on, again, to help people who might be searching the internet, doing Google searches, who might be dealing with grief and searching for resources. We have developed a pretty sophisticated digital marketing strategy over the last couple of years to make sure that we pop up as one of the resources available for free, no cost to anyone in our community, even if you haven't lost a loved one in Hospice of the Piedmont's care. So there's a couple of ways that we do that. Word of mouth is also a pretty phenomenal marketing tool. Not surprisingly, you know, we all share things word of mouth every day, things that we find that we like that have a positive impact on our lives. So think about how many people we've cared for at the end of their life. We've cared for thousands and thousands of people over our 41-year history. And all of those people have families and have this exponential web of people impacted by their death. And so they benefit from the services that we provide post-death of their loved one. And then they share with other people, hey, I experienced this really great healing from the grief counseling that I received at Hospice of the Piedmont. I personally got into hospice work because I lost my dad, and I had a tremendous experience with the grief support that came in the 13 months after my dad died, and it led me to pursue this work. So there's a lot of ways, and things like this, you having us on your show and, you know, sharing the messages, sharing the knowledge. Teresa is a wealth of information and knowledge. And so we're just always looking for new ways, but always looking for ways to share with the community what's available, because there is so much that we can do to support our community.
I just have this, fair or not, and correct me, I just have this stereotype, this image in my head of someone who is grieving, where it's taking the 4th, the 5th, the 11th, the 12th hit before they're convinced, before they decide, okay, now I'm gonna go seek help or talk with someone else that's not in my normal circle.
Oh, yeah. Teresa can speak to that.
That can be true for sure. And especially when sometimes secondary losses come with a death. And so family, they may somehow detach from family, or there may be a financial loss. And so when it gets a bit complicated, that's sometimes too when people reach out. And you're right, grief does come like hits. It's been described as waves. And so when those waves, get stronger, and when it's hard to stand stand and encounter those waves, then it's true. I think that sometimes people then feel like, okay, I need someone else to talk to. And there's no timeline for grief. And so that can happen within the first few months, or that may happen 6 months later or a year later or 2 years later.
Is there a defined emotional purpose of grief? Because we seem to think of it as sadness and remembrance.
Yes.
That can't be the purposes, at least not the sadness.
Right. The purpose for grief is to help us move towards hope and healing, and to integrate the loss, the death in our lives, so that we can move forward and continue our life. And it's not really acceptance. It's more like we accommodate, we acknowledge and recognize that this has happened in our life, and we make it part of our story moving forward. So I would say that the purpose for grief is to heal.
Our guests today, Teresa Haas and Rachel Palm from Hospice of the Piedmont and the Center for Grief and Healing, as we talk about dealing with grief. Is there a typical length of grief, or an acceptable length of grief, a time frame when grief has become far too long?
That is such a good and important question. And there's reluctance about giving it a timeline, as I said before. Certainly sometimes we offer a framework, like, a year allows a person to go through different anniversaries and holidays and just important moments in life. So that then the following year, there's an anticipation of what those will be like without the loved one. But that doesn't mean that, that a person is done grieving in a year. So sometimes grief does become complicated, and maybe it's because of other losses in life or other hardships in life. And then that can be addressed separately. But as I said, there's just no timeline. We can't really, there are expectations. I think somehow in our society, there's an expectation that we'll move forward and be able to be okay. And those expectations create a lot of pressure for people who are grieving. to meet those expectations, but there's not a definitive time frame.
You mentioned the anniversaries and the holidays. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that mm-hmm. a little bit? Going through a holiday,
yeah.
going through whether it's a marriage anniversary or the anniversary of the date of the loss.
Right. Yes. Those, you know, those can hold just, they hold a lot of energy in a person's life. They hold memories. They hold maybe even, you know, different rituals or family traditions. And so when a person who's grieving encounters those, they may be hit with that grief because they're remembering, and it may be bittersweet. But it is important to acknowledge those special days. And we often encourage those we're working with to do something, to be intentional, because sometimes there's that anticipation of the day. And even though maybe our conscious minds forget, our somewhere in us we remember, and so we will potentially feel that day coming. So we try to encourage being intentional about setting aside time, a special time to honor the loved one, maybe just simple ways by lighting a candle or planting a tree or even expressing gratitude to those who have been there and caring and supporting.
Is it... I don't know the proper word choice here as we talk with Teresa Haas and Rachel Palm about grief, both of them from the Hospice of the Piedmont. I'll use the word different. Is it different in terms of dealing with your grief if it's a sudden loss versus an expected loss?
Yeah, good question. I mean, they're each of them have unique components, I think. With sudden loss and maybe if it's a traumatic sudden loss, there are things that make grieving or that initial sort of coming to terms with comprehending make it difficult, and anxiety can really be part of that that initial response. But even when someone is anticipating a loss, there's never really enough time with the people we love. And so even if they know this person is going to die, until that occurs, and after. The person still has to reconcile the death.
There's so much more to be discussed with that, but it's time to take a break. I'll follow up with a question or two on that when we come back. We talk about dealing with grief with Teresa Haas, director of the Center for Grief and Healing at Hospice of the Piedmont, and Rachel Palm, who's the marketing specialist, who can share with us a lot about everything that that the organization offers. We'll be right back. And thanks for being here with us on another Sunday as we're dealing with grief and learning a lot about it with our friends from Hospice of the Piedmont, Rachel Palm and Teresa Haas. Teresa, we were talking about different ways and different types, I don't even know if that's true, of grief when you have a loss that's sudden versus an mm-hmm. expected loss. Can you talk a little mm-hmm. bit more about that? And you're welcome to use me as an example. If I lose a parent unexpectedly versus mm-hmm. if I have a parent in hospice care, are there different things that I need to watch out for in my grief, or that my family or my friends should watch out for as I grieve?
Well, when I first started here at Hospice of the Piedmont, I learned some things about, especially when you're anticipating a loss, some important things to maybe say to a loved one who's dying. And those are, please forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. I love you. And goodbye. And so if there's time to do that, that is a helpful and healing process for both, would be both for you and your parent. So, of course, anticipating death affords us the opportunity of some time, although we never know. And with sudden loss, we can still say those things. It is done more with the person in mind and heart, rather than with the person in the physical sense. So, and of course, when there's sudden loss, as I was saying, there's often anxiety partners with that suddenness, because then we become very aware that life is fleeting, and that we feel that lack of control that we have. And so that's just another element to work with grief.
Rachel, Teresa mentions the anticipation, and if you have a potential death that's in an anticipatory manner. But in today's current world with the pandemic, you might have a family death where you're expecting it. Someone is suffering and in the hospital, but you have no time together. You're not allowed to go visit. In fact, you're forced to remain separate. Is there anything that the Hospice of the Piedmont offers for such things in this manner, where the family is either before the death or after the death?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on a really profound situation that we all find ourselves in right now, which is isolation and having to miss big events, including the death of our loved ones, and not being able to be there and hold our loved one's hand when they might be passing on. We have experienced that. It is obviously heart-wrenching. What we are able to do and what we have done is we have a great team of compassionate, dedicated, safe employees who are protecting themselves with PPE, and they're being there with the family as much as they're able to, with the loved one who's passing away and with the family. There are situations where people in facilities, there might be a lockdown situation, which we saw a lot over the last several months, especially in our area. COVID outbreaks necessitated the lockdown of certain facilities, and then nobody was able to go in, and no one was able to have that human connection with their loved ones who might have been inside the facility. But one way that we're able to connect, luckily, we live in this age of virtual connection, and it is absolutely secondary to real in-person connection. There's no argument at all, but I think I consider us all to be really lucky to be able to have that as an option, you know, even to live in a time where we can have a screen to see our loved one in front of us when we can't see them in person. So that's one thing that we have been doing, is equipping facilities with iPads, if they don't already have them available, to make that connection point a little bit easier for family members who have loved ones they're not able to see, not able to travel and see, for example. And then, as I'm sure Teresa can speak to, we've moved all of our grief services online. So anyone who's interested in taking advantage of a grief support group, events, we have some really cool camps for kids who might be grieving the loss of a grandparent, for example. Everything's available virtually. And, you know, again, secondary to real human connection, but I think we're all doing the best we can with what we've got. And I'm really proud of our organization for stepping up and becoming more flexible and more adaptive in a time that required us all to do that. So those are some of the ways that we're trying to reach out and connect with people in this time that's so isolating and so hard, frankly.
Ladies, do men and women and children grieve differently? And if so, can you tell me more about how they do that?
Well, grief is as unique as love. And so while there are similarities in how adults grieve, there are, you know, there are individual differences. Children do grieve differently, depending on age and developmental stage. And over time, their grief grows and matures as they learn and grow. And I think it's important for adults in adults and children's lives to know that children's grief may surface throughout their childhood and adolescence, and as they begin to understand different aspects of death and loss. Grief also resurfaces, you know, both for children and adults at important milestones for the child or adolescence. And so those times may trigger grief when they wish that their loved one was, you know, present to experience those different moments of success or achievement or celebration.
Rachel, are there different, I don't know, classes? Are there different support groups? Thank you is the word I wanted. Are there different support groups for children versus adults?
Oh, yeah. As Teresa was saying, the way that individuals process grief is so different. You know, a child is not able to have the words, have the vocabulary that an adult does about what they're experiencing, the feelings, you know, the sadness, the emotions, the roller coaster. They're not able to put words to that necessarily. They might not be mature enough. They might just not have the vocabulary or the emotional intelligence to explain what they're going through. So children really process grief and get their emotions out through play and art and expressing themselves, not with words necessarily, but in the ways that they know how to express themselves, which is, I'm familiar with play therapy. What we do at Hospice of the Piedmont is art therapy. We have several art therapists on our staff who are, I mean, they are credentialed by decades. They have decades and decades of experience working with kids to do activities that encourage creative expression, including drawing, writing, telling stories. There's some pottery work that has been done. There's scrapbooking. There's musical expression. So all those different ways that children express grief, we really meet kids where they are with specific staff for those kids. And allowing them the ways to let their feelings out the way that they need to. And I just have to pause because I can't remember the second part of your question. Did you want me to talk to adults and specific offerings?
I'm curious as to, so let's be specific about a parent and a child. How do you help a parent who's lost a child? And I don't want to be demeaning to the situation, but not a 70-year-old parent who's lost their 50-year-old child, but a 30-year-old parent who's lost their 5 or 10-year-old child. How do you help that adult in that situation versus helping the 5 or 10-year-old child who's lost their 30-year-old parent?
Yeah. So we have very specific groups that gather previously in person, for now virtually, that are targeted at those specific subsets of loss. So we have a group that is for adults who have lost their children. We have groups for mother loss. We have groups for father loss. We have groups for spouses who have lost their partner early in life, you know, as you were mentioning, before you get on to your 70s and 80s, but, you know, younger in life, 30s, 40s, 50s, we have groups that specifically gather those people. And then they're facilitated by our wonderful grief support staff, who's able to address the specific needs of those people. And then in addition to addressing the needs of that group, there's some camaraderie and there's some processing that happens when you're sharing experiences that others can relate to. So I'm sure Teresa can speak to that. That's a huge part of healing, is being with other people who go, yeah, I've been through that. I mean, I know. And like, you know, that relatability. So we have really specific groups that really try to address those different types of losses that aren't just someone who's elderly has passed away because they are at the end of their life, but, you know, rather sudden loss or child loss, things like that. I'm sure Teresa can talk more about more specifically what other groups we offer right now, because we're always changing and always trying to meet the needs of the community.
Teresa, before you jump in, can you enlighten myself and the listeners to just give us just some general number here? How many people are we talking about that are coming to Hospice of the Piedmont, the Center for Grief and Healing? Are we talking about a few dozens? Are we talking about several thousands? Because I want to put it in context, and because you're just one organization. I realize that there's a 24-hour number. I recognize that there are other organizations to do this, but I want to, I'm just ready to go, wow, because I'm sure that it's much greater than what the majority of us who aren't using your services really fathom on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, I just ran a report of the last 4 months. We made, this includes myself and Craig Wilt, who's our bereavement coordinator, who serves the northern counties, and we had two other additional support folks. We made in the last 4 months 898 calls.
I'm sorry, repeat that one more time.
898 calls in the last 4 months.
Okay, that makes me stop and pause. Again, we are talking with Teresa Haas and Rachel Palm from the Hospice of the Piedmont and the Center for Grief and Counseling, as we talk about dealing with grief. Teresa, has there been, it seems like a silly question, but has there been an increase in the services over the past year that you attribute to the pandemic?
Yes, I do think so. I'm, you know, trying to look at those numbers more carefully. I do think we've had an increase. I mean, just based on that report I talked about the year before, we, you know, we made 770 calls. So we're looking at like 120 call difference within 4 months. I do think that we have seen an increase because of isolation and because of how our, you know, the restrictions as they should, but they have, you know, they have prevented people from gathering and all the normal things that we would do to, or that people would do to find support for grief. So I do think that the isolation has really been part of what's really complicated grief and what's increased the need.
All right. There's just so much more to discuss, but let's take our next break as we spend the morning talking about grief. Teresa Haas, she's the director at Center for Grief and Healing. Rachel Palm, she's the marketing specialist for Hospice of the Piedmont. We'll return in a moment. And thanks for being here with us today on Sunday morning. As we talk about grief, a topic that has probably touched everyone in their lives at some point, Teresa Haas and Rachel Palm here with us today. Teresa, I'm going to toss this to you. I think I've run into enough people over my lifetime who just hold their emotions tight. They just don't share these things. And so I'm curious how you get through to someone and help them understand that it's better for their, where did you say early, their mind, body, and spirit to talk about things, or whether they come to that, do you just let them come to that realization on their own?
Yeah, I would say the latter. I mean, I think what I strive to offer is just a safe presence. And so, you know, my idea of readiness is not true for everyone. I can't apply that to someone else. And if I can just, I feel like, stand by and abide with someone, and maybe there will be a time where that story will come through. But it is. It's really up to a person to begin to share. And I do think, you know, along with abiding with, it's also just letting them know that your pain doesn't scare me. You know, I will be here, and I can help to hold it, whatever it is.
How have things changed in terms of support or grief overall with families regularly not being able to hold funeral gatherings during the pandemic?
Yeah, I can speak to that. And I wonder, Rachel, if you might too. You know, funeral homes have done an amazing job adapting, I think, to this time as well. And so being able to stream a funeral, my brother died last year, and
We were able to stream the funeral to and family from Germany, and my mother, who wasn't able to travel, was able to see it. And so I think that's been, and Rachel, you mentioned that before, we've adapted in those ways. But certainly, I think it's been hard to honor, and it's been hard sometimes to find closure without having those rituals, those funerals, to say goodbye or to celebrate. But I do feel like we're adapting to making that happen in different ways.
And Rachel?
The closure is really hard to come to when you can't gather and celebrate that life. And I just hope that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and we will be able to properly commemorate all of the things that we've kind of put on hold for the last year at some point, so the healing can happen for people.
So I was looking through the Hospice of the Piedmont webpage, which is hopva.org. That's Hospice of Piedmont VA.org, hopva.org. And there's a variety of services that are offered in the grief support area. Certainly, Hospice of the Piedmont does a lot more. But there's a couple different things listed I wanted to ask you about. There's something called the Grief Intervention Support Team. Mm. Can you tell me about that? Are we talking about the people who do this? Or are we talking about something else?
Right. Well, when there is a community death, a death at a school or in an organization, we are sometimes called to provide grief support, and we will go with, we did this last year in some cases, went as Craig and I went and our art therapists went, and we were able to offer different kinds of modalities of support, like, as Rachel was saying, scrapbooking or just circles, healing circles, grief support circles. And so that is what GIST refers to, those kind of community interventions.
So you go to schools and workplaces.
Mm-hmm. Or organizations, or we'll go to retirement communities. We've done that as well.
Can you give me an example of what might have to happen to take you there, to lead you to a school or a community organization or workplace?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a traumatic death, and where, many people were impacted, like at a school where, either a student or a teacher or both have been involved in a traumatic death, and we can provide those services I mentioned. Sometimes it's an organization saying, we loved this person who died, and our coworkers are all struggling, and can you come and talk with us and provide support and offer a safe place for processing? And so they're kind of a spectrum of scenarios.
And you've also got, I saw where you're doing spring and fall memorial services in Charlottesville and Culpeper. Mm-hmm. How is that? Tell me more about that, because we were just talking about the difficulty in a family possibly holding the more stereotypical funeral gatherings, not always being allowed. So what is the spring and fall memorial service?
Rachel, you might have some good insight on those.
Yeah, sure. So in the past, we've been holding memorial services in the spring to honor specifically patients who were lost in hospice at the Piedmont's care during the previous year. And we invite family members or really anyone connected to that person who passed away to come to the event. And in the spring, again, we usually make it specifically about hospice of the Piedmont loved ones. And we just spend about an hour just paying tribute to those people, celebrating their memory. It's an opportunity for family members to come back and see the care team that might have cared for their loved one. The fall is our memorial illumination. So that's a big community event. We invite anyone who's grieving, anyone who's lost someone. Doesn't have to be under the care of Hospice of the Piedmont. It doesn't have to be in the last year. And that's a beautiful candlelit, non-denominational service that we hold. Again, just a chance to remember our loved ones. We have beautiful music. We have beautiful readings. And we just invite people to come together and just share the community and just spend a couple of an hour or so being reverent to the lives that are no longer with us. And, of course, the last year, being what it is, we had to pivot and we had to figure out a way to still offer this amazing, incredible therapeutic service to our community. So I have to give a shout out to Teresa. I thought the virtual spring memorial that was produced this year was just absolutely phenomenal. It was a series of poignant stories, readings. We still had the opportunity to light candles together from where we were and just remember our loved ones. So we're hoping it's not going to be virtual next year in the spring. Maybe that's as soon as we can hope for, and we'll come back together again in person. But these are just big community events that we invite people to come to just to take another step in the healing.
Rachel Palm, marketing specialist at Hospice of the Piedmont. There's also something listed, you say community, called Community Conversations. Tell everybody about that. What is that?
So that's another opportunity that we are extending to the community to be part of a conversation with us. This particular event is a virtual event. It's going to be all registration and all participation is going to be done completely online. And it's on March 10th at 2 p.m. That's a Wednesday. We're inviting the community to come be part of a presentation between our CEO, Ron Cottrell, and our chief medical officer, Dr. Tim Short. And they're going to have a conversation about actually Ron's personal experience with a family member and their path after a terminal diagnosis and lessons learned from that. And then Tim, of course, I don't know if you know, but he has decades of experience as a family doctor, as a palliative care and hospice care provider. So he has great insight about the conversation around death, which is something that I think we can all admit is a little taboo. You know, we talk a lot as a community, as a society, about birth, and birth is really celebrated. But the other end of the spectrum, death, which none of us are immune to, fortunately, it's something that is not talked about. We don't talk about what we want. We don't talk about the reality of it, that it is an inevitability. So we're trying to really kind of open up the conversation, make it a little less taboo, address the elephant in the room, and have a conversation around end-of-life choices that not just Tim and Ron will participate in, but after their dialogue, we'll open it up for Q&A. So any participant will be able to send in their questions via a chat module, and they'll get to speak with Tim and Ron, and we'll have members of our interdisciplinary team on the call too. So we'll have a chaplain, we'll have a social worker, and we'll have a nurse who will be available to answer questions that the community might have.
We're really excited about the event. We're looking forward to having the community show up for it virtually. Super easy. You can register on our website, which is, as you already stated, Rick, it's hopva.org. And the event, again, is March 10th at 2 p.m. And you do have to register because we are going to be sending out unique links to everyone to tune in. It's not a Zoom call, so it's not going to be something you can just hop onto. It's going to require a unique link, and then we'll share the recorded session later in that week after we're done on March 10th. So March 10th at 2 p.m.
Okay. So we've just got a little bit of time left, and I've got some other questions I want to talk about, things that I've seen for others. Well, I guess, you know what? I still do it too. So let me start here. People seem to carry memorabilia of those who are lost. Clothes. I have a friend who who still has her parents' clothes, or some of them, even though they may be number of years after the death. Is this okay? What does it ever become too long to hold on to?
It is okay. It's just, it's normal, and it's a way that we stay connected. You know, clothes have, you know, may have a particular scent of the person or just have an essence of that person. And of course we want to hold it close. We want to hold close what we can. So, you know, those are comforting and helpful ways, that we remember. Again, you know, it just goes back to the timeline. I think when things get in the way of daily functioning, then that's when we start getting concerned. And so, I guess I want to say that, and I kind of don't want to say that in a way, just because really I think we, our ultimate effort is to stay connected, and so those are ways we do that, or like reconfiguring like the ring, you know, putting a ring on a necklace, wearing it. Sometimes people do that, all their lives, and that's just a way of staying close.
So we've got about 2 minutes left. I want to ask about loss of pets. I see that as something on the website, and I think that's, I don't know whether to say fortunately or not, that's the most grief that I have had to suffer at this time. I've had grandparents and great-grandparents pass, but you're at a much younger stage in life when that happens. And the greatest attachment that, you know, changed my life the most was a pet. And and so speak to that, please.
Well, I mean, our pets are our companions, and they provide this unconditional love that we depend on. And so we're in relationship with our pets in the same way. And sometimes people love their pets more than they love the people in their lives, and our companions with their pets more than with people. And so pet loss is often minimized. But it can be just as devastating and painful. And so, we do have a booklet online, about pet loss, and we just had a workshop on, actually last Friday about pet loss. It is a very, very important, very important to honor and to recognize how meaningful pets are in our lives and in our relationships with them.
I'm sure some people find that to be, some people are like, yes, complete agreement, and others are going, that's so foolish. But, you know.
Well, the sad like thing said, is that, the sad thing I think about pet loss is you don't get to take time off work and go to a funeral and have this public mourning. And that's a shame because, as Teresa said, they are members of your family. And I know from experience that it's a real mourning process. I'm glad we have that service to address that area of grief for our community.
Yes, we get so much joy from pets, and they provide so much to us. It's what people feel, and I mean, there's, you know, we can't control what others feel, and they're allowed to think those things.
Well, I hope that those listening today, whether it's for a parent, a child, a sibling, another person in their family, whether it was a death that was sudden or a death that was foreseen, whether it was a loss due to COVID, the pandemic, or not, or whether it was for their pet, will take advantage and reach out to the Hospice of the Piedmont Center for Grief and Counseling, or to some other organization that can offer help. Teresa Haas, the director of the Center for Grief and Healing at Hospice of the Piedmont, and Rachel Palm, marketing specialist at Hospice of the Piedmont. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Rick. It was good to be with you.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.